Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Last week, the South Florida Water Management District Governing Board approved a plan to move forward with testing what it calls emergency estuary protection wells, which it says could reduce the need for ecologically damaging discharges to the coastal estuaries from Lake Okeechobee. The wells would use deep injection technology to pump water about 3,000 feet below ground into what's known as the boulder zone. According to a district press release, the wells would only be used during high water emergency situations like the one we're currently facing. We're joined for the rest of the hour by Ainsley Marr. She's the section administrator for the Northern Everglades at the South Florida Water Management District. Ainsley, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
For starters, can you tell me a little bit about what the governing board approved exactly?
Yes, ma'am. They came to a consensus on a couple of sites where we will perform some exploratory investigation of the boulder zone at two different locations where we can better understand what the boulder zone's capacity is at two locations specifically. We understand what the boulder zone can do overall and in general, but what it looks like specifically at different locations is of interest to us because we want to be sure that we can take advantage of its capacity. And that capacity can vary determining, you know, based off of where you are within the region.
What exactly is the boulder zone? It sounds like a level in a video game.
It does kind of sound like that, doesn't it? And it kind of is a level. It's one of the strata underneath the surface of South Florida. It is one of our deepest strata. It's about 3,000 feet below the surface. And above that are many other layers, many other levels. And the one that most people think of when they think of putting water into the ground is actually the Florida Aquifer, which is only at about 1,000 feet. But we're talking about going down to 3,000 feet, which is where the boulder zone is.
So you're plumbing this down? It's obviously a 3,000-foot-long pipe that you're putting water down, or...?
Pretty close to it. So again, we know where the boulder zone lies, roughly around 3,000 feet below the surface. And as we drill, we are looking at what is coming out of the surface, what is coming out of the well, because what we drill, we have to drill out.
Mm-hmm.
And so we look at the rocks that are coming out. We look at the geology that we see as the drill moves further down into the earth. And we understand that different strata and where we've hit within those different areas below the surface. And when we hit certain layers, we know how far we've gone. We know what layer, what strata we're in. So, yes, we take a look, and once we hit 3,000 feet, it might be 2,500, it might be 3,400. We know it's in that region, in this area.
So what is down there?
Lots of limestone. Lots of very porous limestone. It's very fragmented. In some areas, once you hit that layer, it becomes very voluminous in area. And so you can really store and move a lot of water into that zone.
Have we done that before? Have you ever put water down there?
We have not put water at 3,000 feet. However, it's not an unknown technology. It's not something that people don't do. There are many, many municipalities and counties throughout South Florida who use this technology to remove wastewater, and they will dump wastewater into the boulder zone. We are looking at moving stormwater.
Oh, okay. Ew, wastewater. So has there been anything that's happened bad after putting all the wastewater down there? I know that's not what you're talking about doing, but I'm sure you've looked at what other municipalities are doing.
Yes, and so there have been failures before, and you know that's one thing that's really important to us. And after those failures occurred, I believe they were in the 80s or the early 90s, there was a lot of regulation that came into play. And so that regulation helped municipalities, counties, or whomever's looking to put in a deep injection well to really understand what kind of monitoring needs to happen so that failures don't occur and that we can stop pumping and we can make corrective actions before any kind of failure occurs. So for us, it being stormwater, we're looking at what the EPA recognizes as a class five well, which is non-hazardous material, non-hazardous water that we're putting down there. A wastewater well is looking at a class one permit, so mm-hmm. It's something that people recognize has toxins. What we're looking at does not classify as a class one well, but a class five.
So by stormwater, are we talking about water that's filled up Lake Okeechobee or stormwater that's been collected elsewhere?
It would be primarily Lake Okeechobee water at this point. Where we're looking to place these would be taking on water that's being discharged from Lake Okeechobee. That doesn't mean that that's the only thing it could ever take on. If we place them in different areas that are that can collect basin runoff. So this would be water that's running off of our streets, water that's running off of our yards. It could possibly collect some of this water as well.
Okay. So once it gets there, does it just stay there, or does it stay there and wait to be treated and then used for something else?
Well, no, the water is treated prior to being injected into the well.
Oh, okay.
So it does go through kind of a solids removal.
So I'm just kind of thinking about a big blue-green algae monster down there.
Oh, no. We would be collecting any solids that come through. So because we'd be pulling water off of a canal, if we were pulling from Lake Okeechobee or pulling water directly from Lake Okeechobee, those kinds of solids would be filtered out. Those would not be injected into the well. And what we're putting down there is very clean compared to what some of our municipalities and counties put down into the well.
Mm-hmm. So how much water would each one of these wells take? So it just kind of depend on what kind of an area that you hit when you get down there?
Right. So the well is very, very much reliant on, and its capacity are very much reliant on what the boulder zone can take. So that's what the test well tells us. It tells us, is the boulder zone capable of handling what we would say we're after, which is 15 million gallons a day into these wells? If the boulder zone can handle that, that's what we will pump when we're in a condition where there is nowhere else for this water to go. When all of our storage areas are full, when all of the canals are at their max levels, this is our opportunity to say, well, we can either put it into the estuaries because that's our last resort, or we can put it into these wells.
So this would be another step before the last result of putting it in the estuaries.
Yes, ma'am.
Would it be enough? I mean, I'm wondering if it would be, I guess it depends on what you find once you get down there as far as how big the caves or the wells would end up being. But do you anticipate it being something that's worth doing on a larger scale? Is it going to be able to handle the amount of water that we would need to move?
Sure. And when I say wells, I don't mean just one or two. Obviously, in order to actually handle a large quantity of water, we have to have multiple wells. We're looking at getting wells at the size of 15 million gallons a day. It's about a 24-inch well, and one is not going to be enough. So we're looking for areas where the boulder zone is capable of handling multiple wells in one location, clusters of wells. And when we can pile up these clusters, we can take in a lot more water at once. So we did a demonstration the other day at our governing board meeting where we said, you know, in September, between September 1st and September 11th, the Army Corps released, on average, some pulse releases, and they averaged around 1,170 CFS per day. So if we had 60 wells, we could have diverted all of that pulse-released water into these wells, and that water would have never have made it to the estuaries.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have made a significant difference.
But I'm sure you hear it because there are always critics everywhere. What are critics saying about this? I mean, what are the concerns that they have?
Well, of course, you know, there's going to be a party who agrees with you and a party who doesn't agree with what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the parties who don't agree are very concerned about the quality of water that we're putting into the wells, which, you know, we've tried to make very clear that this is not the same water that you're seeing your municipality or your county putting into the boulder zone. There's also the concern that this is water that we might need in the future. And again, you know, our response to that is the same every time, that this is water that cannot be collected in the current system, that is, if it does not go into the well, it's going to go to tide. It's going to make it to the estuary because every other opportunity that we have available to us is full. And there's concerns that these are going to replace much larger, longer planned projects and programs that the federal government and the state have had in place since 2000, the Comprehensive Everglades Restoration Program. And, of course, this is not. This is a supplement. This is to help us find solutions in the very short term until we can put the Comprehensive Everglades Restoration Program into place and have it completely built out. And until then, our counties, our municipalities are calling for action. And right now, our action is we have an immediate solution that's going to get us at least one step in the right direction and until we can get our long-term plans in place.
So you're saying it's kind of more of an immediate solution. How long will it take from this point? Right now we're in a testing phase?
Well, when we say test, again, the only thing we're testing, we're not really testing the well technology. We're testing whether the boulder zone specifically at one location can handle however much water it can handle.
Mm-hmm.
And so right now we're looking at two sites. And if those sites, those test wells, show us that there's a significant amount of capacity, then we'll proceed putting in a more permanent set of wells, maybe even a cluster. And so we could probably get through that process within a couple of years. Well, you know, we can certainly have a test well up and have the information back to us in about a year. So once we understand that, we can move forward a lot quicker. The Comprehensive Everglades Restoration Program is a very long-term plan. As I said, it started in 2000 when Congress approved it, and it is not built out yet, and it takes a whole lot of money to get there. And the wells are, as I said, a short-term gain to allow us to make some improvements before we get to the final build-out of SERP.
How much does it cost approximately to drill one of these wells, or a cluster, if you will? I mean, if you're going to do one, you're going to do more than one. So if you're going to put together a cluster, do you know how much that would cost?
Well, it depends on the cluster. It depends on how many wells are going to be able to fit on the site, how much the boulder zone can handle. But a well, typically, depending on the site, of course, is probably somewhere between $5 and $7 million. And then if you can cluster these so that they could take advantage of the same infrastructure, then you're going to find some savings and scale up. But if you were to just do one, we're looking anywhere, like I said, between $5-7 million for the well and maybe another $1 million for the infrastructure.
Yeah, once you get all the equipment and the infrastructure there, duplicating it would bring the cost down, I would imagine, on the additional ones.
Sure.
So you said the water goes down there, and you said maybe it could be used at a later time. Is there a pump system or something to get the water back out of there?
Well, the ASR system, which is the one that goes down to 1,000 feet, could be used at a later time. The water that goes into a deep injection well system or an estuary protection well system is down to a 3,000 feet. It is not returned to the surface, but over maybe, say, 1,000 years, it might make it out to the ocean.
Oh, okay. It's just really intriguing. I just don't really think about what's going on that far down there.
I always call it deep inner space. Most people haven't seen it.
Yeah, sounds like the boulder zone, right?
Right.
So it's not as porous. It's porous in that it has caverns, but it's not as porous as limestone in that it's all just going to seep right back up?
Correct. So what, you know, when you install the actual permanent facility, after you've gone through and tested, what is the capacity? Can the well handle it? We install a monitor well, which is, I call it, its neighbor well, which is a little bit shorter of a well, a much smaller well. It monitors how water levels are moving and pressures within that area and the salinity. Where is the salinity? Because that water in the boulder zone is saline. And when the monitor well sees, if the monitor well sees, the movement of the salt water moving further up into those higher levels, mm-hmm. those other strata, it will send a report to whoever's monitoring the well to say, we're having some movement, cut the well off, investigate before proceeding. So that you don't have, if it's a wastewater system, in our case a stormwater system, you don't have that stormwater coming back up. Mm-hmm. And typically it's very unlikely, but it is a requirement that we have these monitor wells put in a permanent system. And so you can keep track of what's happening.
Do you have any final thoughts that you'd like to add to our conversation today?
Well, this is something that the district is looking to move forward with. The board is behind it, and we are excited to be able to provide an immediate relief to the many municipalities and the counties that have been asking the state and the district, how can you help us today? And so this is our answer for today, and we hope to be able to use this in conjunction with the Comprehensive Everglades Restoration Program, once it's built out, to really provide a great toolbox and alternatives available to us to deal with what Mother Nature brings us.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have, but I want to thank my guest, Ainsley Marr, Section Administrator for the Northern Everglades for the South Florida Water Management District. Ainsley, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you so much, Julie.
I really appreciate it. Our show today was produced by Mike Canary and myself. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.